Hello and welcome back to the White Pew podcast. I am ZM and it is Sunday the 22nd of October 2023. There is no Sunday text today on the White Pew. I will be using our podcast website, social media, Sunday slot for a slightly different purpose. The reason behind this is because we joined a global strike of over 100 artists and cultural organisations in the UK, in the US, in Europe, across the world, in solidarity with the people of Palestine. The strike was actually on Friday the 20th, so 2 days ago, but I think between Gabrielle and myself, we thought it made a bit more sense to carry that over to today when, yeah, most of our activity in the public sphere takes place on a Sunday. So it made sense for us to carry it over to today. And that's what I'm going to be using this Sunday slot for. I'm going to read a joint statement from myself and Gabrielle, and we've got a favour to ask you. So bear with, and thank you for your attention and time on a Sunday. We aren't publishing a text this week. Instead, got a favour to ask. Please could you take the time you'd normally spend reading art criticism and use it to email your MP. Please ask them to do something. Take action and stop the war on Gaza. And then on the website text version of this statement, it is linked, and I will link this in the show notes, like the description, on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. But there is a link to Palestine Solidarity Campaign's email example. If you put in your postcode, an email template should come up. Please change the wording and put it in your own words. You'll be more likely to get a response because MPs are more likely to actually see it. MPs generally get a lot of emails and they have intense spam filters that will send an auto reply out to whatever the algorithm picks up as an email. If they get a huge influx of emails in with the same wording, they'll just put it into the spam filter. Alternatively, you can just freestyle yourself. If you put your postcode into a link, a second link, to get the email address for your MP, your local councillors, and if you're in London, you'll get a link to, you'll get the email addresses for your London Assembly members. You could email them all. If you want prompts, ask them to call for an immediate ceasefire, a complete end to the attacks on Gaza. Ask them to call for the siege on Gaza to be lifted so that aid can be sent in. This siege has been in place since 2007. Palestinians in Gaza were reliant on aid before this current total blockade. Trucks being sent in from Egypt won't even touch the sides. Reminds them that collective punishment is a war crime. The siege of Gaza is a breach of international law. Over 1 million people in Gaza have been forcibly displaced, left without food, water, or electricity. Hospitals are being bombed, apartment blocks are being flattened, thousands of people are dying. The mass graves are full and they're running out of body bags. This is morally quite clear. We cannot stand by and watch it happen passively. Israel has made it clear that they want to mount a ground invasion of Gaza. This would be absolutely catastrophic in a situation that's already so, so dire. Urge your MP to oppose this in strong, vocal terms. Israeli politicians and military leaders are using genocidal language and threats. Israel's Defence Minister Yoav Gallant described Palestinians in Gaza as animals, while other Israeli government figures pledged that Israel would open the gates of hell. Still, British politicians repeat over and over that Israel has the right to defend itself. We want to be clear, defence is not what's happening in Gaza right now, it's genocide. Remind your MP that they represent you and you would like them to speak out about this on your behalf. The UK must stop the export of arms and military technology to Israel. The UK has approved millions of pounds of licences for military equipment to Israeli forces, including components for F-35 fighter jets. These fighter jets are firing bombs into Gaza in illegal attacks against Palestine's civilian population. Call for your MP to oppose and speak out against arms sales to Israel because they are using the weapons we sell them to commit literal war crimes. Urge your MP to support independent investigations of all violations of international law, including the open ICC investigation into the case of Palestine. And while you're here, We're assuming that if you're interested in the white pube, you're interested in the arts. This huge industry where culture is made, where culture becomes public. Don't you think it's weird and horrible that galleries and arts institutions are mostly silent right now? Barely any of them have spoken out to condemn the literal genocide Israel is committing in Gaza. I can count them on one hand. If you have time left over after emailing your MP, you could pick an institution, your favourite, your least favourite, the one nearest you, who hasn't made a public statement of support for the Palestinian people, and email them. Ask them why they haven't spoken out in solidarity with Palestine, with Gaza, why they haven't publicly condemned the atrocities and violence committed by Israel. Ask them to do so as soon as possible. Ask them about their ethics policy. Do they have BDS policies, boycott, divestment and sanctions policies written in currently? And if not, why not? Do they accept funding from arms dealers? Ask them if any of this information is publicly available. Arts institutions normally have public email addresses on their websites, normally a contact at or hello at or info at address for general concerns. If you're worried about hassling overworked front of house staff, or if you're not sure whether your email will be read by those in charge of making decisions about governance, policy and ethics guidelines, you could put the gallery's website URL into an email address scraper like hunter.io/domain-search. It is free. It will show you a couple of email addresses and the email format the gallery uses, so you can make an educated guess about what a senior staff member's email might be if it's not listed. We're not asking you to be rude or horrible to people. There are many people who work at these galleries who are horrified by the genocide, horrified by the murder of civilians in Gaza, who agree that this must be condemned and stopped. It's not about the individual people that work there. It's about the galleries as institutions themselves. As institutions, galleries make up the social and cultural infrastructure of our public life. They have access to a wider audience of the public, online and offline. An institutional statement of support could be important. It could put Israel's illegal war in Gaza at the front of people's minds. It could make this issue unavoidable. It could mean that something is more likely to be done because public mood is louder, clearer. It could change the tone of public consensus. It could change someone's mind. The more people we convince to speak out, take action by demanding their political representatives act on their behalves, take action by protesting and spreading awareness, the more likely we are to convince the government, our government, that their unwavering support of Israel is an untenable political position. If you're wondering what any of this has to do with the art world, if you're wondering why art has to involve itself in politics in the first place, then we don't see eye to eye, but I do understand your position. Fair enough. Art isn't life and death in itself. But there are so many links between this war in Gaza and the art world. Artists are being murdered in Gaza, in Palestine, at the hands of the Israeli state. I feel like we owe our peers some solidarity. Even if all we can do is make sure their murders don't go by unnoticed or unmarked, as if nothing happened, I think we owe them the respect of our outrage. But more clearly than that, there are art world funders with blood on their hands, blood on their money, that they're pushing through the art world in the hope of laundering it, their money and their reputation, clean. If you haven't read Morgan Quaintance's article, Looking Back in Anger, it was published in Art Monthly 443 in February 2021. I have linked it on the site as a PDF if you want to read the full thing, but too long didn't read. I will read an excerpt from, I think, part two. There's Candida Gertler, a close personal friend of Israel's controversial president, Benjamin Netanyahu. According to the Jerusalem Post, Candida and her husband Zach threw a private party for Netanyahu on his 70th birthday in 2009. Now, Candida Gertler's organisation Outset, co-founded with Yon Appeal in 2003, is behind a vast number of projects here and abroad. Including Imran Peretta's The Destructors 2019, a film which in part charts the anxieties of Muslim youth in East London, but was through Gertler's Outset, funded by a supporter of a man many see as responsible for destroying the lives of Muslim youth in Palestine. I do want to note that This two-part article, Looking Back in Anger, was followed up by an interview Morgan did in, I think, Art Monthly 445, two issues later, an interview with Imran Peretta, who has mentioned here his work, The Destructors, as being funded by Outset. But in the interview, Morgan and Imran discussed structural complicity and the fact that Imran didn't know that Outset was funded by Candida Gertler, that Candida Gertler had links to the Netanyahu's in this way. And so much of the way that this funding is allowed to be pushed through the art world, laundered clean because of the cuts to public funding, the reliance of the sector on opaque private sources, and it creates a terrible situation in which artists are asked to choose between their ethics, their principles, their moral stance, and their livelihoods, which is an unfair and deeply fucked situation to be in. But yeah, I just want to note that because Imran is mentioned by name, and it's not really the point. The point is about Candida Gertler and Outset. The main important points: Candida Gertler is the co-founder, co-director, and trustee of Outset Contemporary Art Fund. Her and her husband are also close personal family friends of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They hosted Netanyahu's 70th birthday at their home in Tel Aviv. Netanyahu's wife, Sarah Netanyahu, attended their son, Raphael Gertler's wedding in London this year. And then, in case you aren't actually aware of who Benjamin Netanyahu is, he's Israel's Prime Minister. I've linked a couple of articles, I think two, on the point after that says this is Benjamin Netanyahu, just for some context. The headlines of the articles are: Netanyahu is to blame for the Hamas war, say 4 out of 5 Israelis. And then that's from The Telegraph, and then another from Newsweek, I think. Netanyahu is facing calls for war crime investigation. This Spanish officials have called for Netanyahu to be charged with war crimes, or investigated for war crimes. The next point: Candida leads fundraising efforts for the Freeze Art Fair Special Acquisitions Fund, which buys artworks to donate to the Tate Collection. Candida and her husband, Zach Gertler, have contributed to the private philanthropic fund, as well as leading on fundraising efforts. As well as the Freeze Acquisition Fund, the Gertlers also donate to JNF UK. They are official patrons listed on the organisation's website. The JNF have been funding Israel's forcible appropriation of land from Palestinians since the Nakba in 1948. They provide funds to the OR movement, an organisation involved in constructing an illegal settlement called Haran to replace the Palestinian village of al-Haran. They've also supported the illegal settlement of Sansana, a village in the occupied West Bank. The list obviously goes on, but that's for brevity. A reminder that Israeli settlements in the West Bank are in direct violation of international law. Please see Article 49 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. And again, using this as a chance to remind people and bring to the attention of people that might not have heard. If you haven't heard of the Zabludovichs and the boycott of their money and patronage, please take the time to read the text we wrote in 2021 called Boycott Zabludovich. Too long didn't read. There's a call to boycott the Zabludovich Arts Trust, including the Zabludovich Collection. This is because their £1 million plus annual budget comes from Poju and Anita Zabludovich and their personal fortune, which in turn is the accumulated profit from property that has included interests on illegally occupied Palestinian land in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and dealing and servicing arms to the Israeli Defence Force and the Israeli Air Force. The main important points: since 2014, there has been an international call to boycott the Zabludovich Art Trust and all its various international cultural holdings. The boycott is a collective refusal to work for or with the Zabludovich Art Trust, a refusal of your work, labour, and the sale of your artwork to the Zabludovich Art Trust or to visit any of its institutions. The institutions include the Zabludovich Collection Project Space in North London, a gallery space in New York's 1500 Broadway, and a residency programme in Finland. There's also Data Editions and Times Square Space, because though they aren't part of the Zabludovich Arts Trust, I think, they were set up using Zabludovich family money. The Zabludovich has also provided seed funding for ARTA, A-R-T-A, all caps, a fine art shipping startup based in New York. The Zabludovich Art Trust is a charitable organisation run by Podu and Anita Zabludovich. Podu is the chairman, Anita is the director. Podu Zabludovich's father, Shlomo Zabludovich, founded Soltam Systems in 1950. Soltam Systems is an Israeli defence contractor that manufactures artillery for the Israeli Defence Force, or the Israeli Occupation Force, depending on who you ask. He made millions, an estimated $200 to $300 million. Podu Zabludovich is the CEO of a private investment organisation called the Tamares Group. Tamares has a $3 billion investment portfolio, including owning shares in Nafom Holdings. Nafom is an aviation group, the largest in Israel, and it provides military aircraft maintenance for the Israeli Air Force. Last Friday, the Israeli Air Force tweeted that it has dropped about 6,000 bombs on Gaza. They included pictures of entire blocks of buildings flattened to rubble. This was on Friday, 12th of October, over a week ago, before the airstrike that hit Al Ali Baptist Hospital in Gaza City, killing over 500 people. We've also linked a video of that press conference held by the doctors at Al Ali Baptist Hospital. In the clip, a British-Palestinian surgeon called Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitta, a volunteer with Doctors Without Borders, Medicine Sans Frontières, speaks in English. The bodies are pixelated at the beginning of the clip, but there is graphic content. Tamara's group's property holdings have included a shopping centre in Male Adumim, an illegal settlement in the West Bank. Israeli settlements in the West Bank, again including East Jerusalem, are in direct violation of international law. These are Israeli colonies on occupied Palestinian land, not according to me, according to the UN. Podu Zabludovich is the founder and former chairman of BICOM, the Britain-Israel Communications and Research Centre, an organisation founded in 2001 which lobbies the UK government on behalf of Israel. He is reported to have given the pressure group more than £2 million in 3 years. This too long didn't read is condensed down. We recommend that you read the full text, Boycott Zabludovich, if you want clarification, nuance or further understanding. After this brief, at the end of this statement, I'm actually going to stitch the audio from the BDZ Boycott Zabludovich text. So just keep listening if you want to read it. Thank you for your time and attention on a Sunday. Thank you if you have already emailed, and thank you if you do now go on and send any emails. That is the end of our joint statement. And I just want to add, I'm aware that we're currently living through a moment in time where there is an all-time low, like a complete lack of faith in our political system, our politicians, our government, our elected representatives, maybe even the state itself. I share that lack of faith. We share that lack of faith, both me and Gabrielle. We're asking you to do this because we are currently in a position where our government, Rishi Sunak, is over in Israel standing next to Netanyahu saying, "We hope you'll win." He's speaking on our behalf because he is maybe an unelected prime minister, but he's an elected representative of the British people. We live in a representative democracy where our democratic interests are mediated by a political class that represent them for us. We are not allowed to have a direct democratic voice. We have to channel that voice through these elected representatives. And they are doing a shit job of it. They are telling Netanyahu that we hope he'll win. I think we need to email them and let them know that we don't. That we want the war to stop and that we're not willing to sit back and passively watch a genocide take place in real time across our timelines, on the news, on our screens, that is morally repugnant to us. Thank you for your time and for listening. I just wanted to add that because, yeah, we say all of this not in spite of that lack of faith. We say all of this, aware of that lack of faith in the political system, sharing that lack of faith in the political system. And we ask it, still knowing that if that's all we can do, we should do it anyway. Thank you. I'm going to shut up now. And Zarina from 2021 is going to start speaking. She's going to be reading the BDZ Boycott Zabludovic text. So if you do want more information about why, how, and what the boycott involves, that's going to play. So just carry on listening. Thank you for your time on a Sunday, and goodbye. Have a good weekend. Hello. It is Sunday, the 20th of June, 2021. I am ZM, and this week's text on the White Pube is an essay called Boycott Zabludovic. The text version of this essay can be found at thewhitepube.com/BDZ. Poju and Anita Zabludovic have been collecting art since 1994. They have an official charitable organisation, the Zabludovic Art Trust, of which Poju is the chairman and Anita is the director. Their collection of art is now fairly massive, and it has a formal home in the Zabludovic Collection, a gallery chain principally owned by the Zabludovic Art Trust. That principal ownership just means that at least 80% of it is owned by the Zabludovic Art Trust. This might all seem a bit tedious, but this tangled and confusing network is just what rich people's financial footprint looks like. Bear with me while I make the connections. There's a Zabludovic Collection project space in North London, a gallery space in New York's 1500 Broadway, and a residency programme in Finland. Anita Zabludovic also collaborated with David Grin, a curator, in setting up Data Editions, a site that lets collectors purchase video, sound, and web-based art editions. Anita Zabludovic provided the seed funding for Data Editions, and the Zabludovic Collection provides a healthy amount of funding for a long list of cultural institutions in London as well as internationally. They have handily provided an alphabetized list of the most notable ones here, and then there's a link. Their daughter, Tiffany Zabludovic, used family money to found Times Square Space, a residency and exhibition program in vacant offices in Times Square, New York. Since 2014, there has been an international call to boycott the Zabludovic Art Trust and all its various international cultural holdings. The boycott is a collective refusal to work for or with the Zabludovic Art Trust, a refusal of your work, labour, and the sale of your artwork to the Zabludovic Art Trust or to any of its institutions. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you how the Zabludovic goes about operating despite the boycott, and then I'm going to explain some nitty-gritty practicalities about the boycott as praxis. If you're ready to dismiss this because you already know where you stand, hear me out. I'll even run you through both sides. This might be a long one, but I promise you it's worth it. Just hold tight. Since 1990, Poju Zabludovic has been the CEO of a private investment organisation called the Tamares Group. Tamares Group was founded by Poju's father, Shlomo Zabludovic. It has a $3 billion investment portfolio, but specifically it has stakes in a company called Knafem Holdings. I really hope I'm saying that right. Knafem is the largest aviation holding group in Israel. Through its Maintenance Wings Limited Partnership, Knafem has a long-term contract to provide military aircraft maintenance services for the Israeli Air Force. In May 2021, the Israeli Air Force carried out 1,500 strikes on Gaza. Over 10 days, Israeli airstrikes demolished, completely or partially, 18 buildings, including the offices of the Associated Press, 3 schools and 6 hospitals, and the Al-Shati refugee camp. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed in a period of 10 days. As I am writing this, Israel has broken the ceasefire and launched airstrikes into Gaza. I cannot find reporting on the casualties yet. This military link is an old one. In 1950, Shlomo Zabludovich founded Soltam Systems, an Israeli defence contractor that specialises in manufacturing artillery for the Israeli Defence Force, or Israeli Occupation Force. They make howitzers so big they have to be mounted on trucks or towed by a built-in diesel engine and wheels and operated by a team of 7 people. Shlomo Zabludovich made millions, an estimated $200 to $300 million, supplying these enormous fucking guns and this artillery to the IDF or the IOF. That is, in part, where Podu Zabludovich's family money comes from. This isn't just a historic link to an army or bodies that have committed well-documented war crimes. The supply of services to the Israeli Air Force is current and ongoing. Further to that, Tamarez Group's property holdings have included a shopping centre in Male Adamim, an illegal settlement in the West Bank. This link popped up as recently as 2009 in an episode of Channel 4's Dispatches. The investigation describes the settlement of Male Adamim as strategically crucial in ensuring Jerusalem remains in Israeli hands, so much so that Netanyahu launched his election campaign in the settlement in 2005. Just a reminder, Israeli settlements in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, are in direct violation of international law. These are Israeli colonies on occupied Palestinian land, according to the UN. In the realm of soft capital, Podu is also the founder, major funder, and former director of BICOM, Britain-Israel Communications and Research Centre, a private research centre dedicated to increasing understanding of Israel and the Middle East in the UK. Through BICOM, Podu has a significant amount of sway in shaping public, media and governmental perception and opinion of Israeli occupation. Podu was caught up in Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption investigation and has provided a significant amount of funding for both the Conservative Friends of Israel and the Conservative Party itself, if you were wondering where his shaping of public perception would lean. Financially, this activity takes place through Tamara's group. Tamara's real estate investments appears 4 times on David Cameron's Register of Members' Interests between 2005 and 2007. The financial contributions from Tamara's group to the Conservative Party at present total at least £380,000. Zabludovich Art Projects is the registered charitable body for the London Project Space and other arts activity in the UK. Their Companies House report for the 2009 financial year stated an income of £1,181,521 in 2019 and £1,114,769 in 2018. According to the Zabludovich Art Projects report, when declaring its sources of income, the charity has no regular source of income other than the donations it receives from the Zabludovich Art Trust. Podu Zabludovich is the director and trustee of the Zabludovich Art Trust and is listed as such in the Zabludovich Collections 2019 financial report. The charity does not carry out any fundraising activities. The Zabludovich Collections' more than £1 million annual budget comes from the Zabludoviches and their personal fortune, which in turn is accumulated profit from property that has included interests on illegally occupied Palestinian land, and dealing and servicing arms to the Israeli Defense Force and Air Force. Like this, Tamara's group acts as the corporate arm of the Zabludovich Collection. The Zabludovich Collection's cultural activity acts as a PR front, laundering bloody money through the art world. It comes in from Tamara's to the Zabludovich Art Trust and into the collection like a straight line. But we should be specific about where it goes after that and whose labour and artwork this money is being laundered through. And boy, do I have a story for you. Way back in 2017, when I was a baby fresh artist, not even 6 months out of art school, I got an email from Haroon Mirza. He wanted to nominate me for a fancy sounding show and also speak to me about including my work in another show alongside his work at a gallery in London. He didn't specify which gallery. We arranged to meet for coffee near his studio in Camden. What follows is all alleged, as I have emails as proof of the conversation before and after, but I obviously can't substantiate an in-person conversation. So maybe this is a fictional conversation between a made-up older male artist called Haroon with a U, okay? Haroon. And a hypothetical younger female artist called Serena. In this fictional world, they sit down for coffee and fictional Haroon says that he was interested in hypothetical Serena's work. He had seen a few pieces of her work when he was on the selection committee for a fictional graduate exhibition called Bloopberg New Contemporaries. Haroon came round to the topic of the show he wanted to include Serena's work in. He specified the gallery this show would be at. The Zabludovich Collection. Serena was suspicious. She had heard of the boycott and was familiar with the fact that the Zabludovich Collection's money came from arms dealing. Haroon told Serena that the arms dealing had nothing to do with Podju, and as soon as he was able to, he sold the arms company. He now makes his money in property, which is much better. Haroon said that the Zabludoviches were incredibly personally invested in diplomacy towards a two-state solution, and that they organised meetings between leaders on both sides behind closed doors. The boycott narrative lacked nuance. We're all complicit in a multitude of things against our own will, no ethical consumption under capitalism. This hardline boycott missed out their sincere progressive intentions. Haroon said this show could be a great opportunity. The Zabludovich Collection is passionate about collecting work by young, exciting artists and investing in people's careers from the very beginning. Haroon said the Zabludovich Collection would be looking to buy the artworks Serena might put in this show, and that if they bought one artwork, it would be a short jump to them purchasing more. The purchase would be an investment, remember? They were powerful players to have in your corner. Haroon said the Zabludovich Collection people had noticed Serena's work already. They'd kept an eye out for her since her degree show, seen her work in Bloopberg, New Contemps. They had identified her as one to watch. Serena left the coffee shop feeling confused and a little bit furious. She's quite young, didn't know anything about the art world and how it all worked, not really. She texted her friend, Gabriel, who had been waiting for news about it all. Together on a phone call, they did some Googling and discovered that the property investments Haroon had mentioned had included properties in occupied Palestinian territory. A few days after we met, Haroon Mirza emailed again, introducing me to the director of the Zabludovich Collection, Elizabeth Nielsen. Elizabeth sent me an email inviting me to come and speak with her or visit the gallery space anytime I wanted. She sent me her phone number and was explicitly clear that she was keen to speak to me about this opportunity and more. I was 22 and I didn't know my arse from my elbow. The art world was opaque to me, but here I was being explicitly offered access to the director of a large institution with a lot of money. I obviously said no. I even apologised to Haroon for some unfathomable reason. I explained the information I had found out about Podu's property interests, like this was information he might not have known. Even though it was always going to be a no, I'm telling you this story because specific conditions were created around me that made this the hardest no I have ever had to say. It isn't an isolated incident. This strategy of reaching out to young, new graduates is part of the way the Zabludovich collection go about working. In the Zabludovich collection's own words, the programme features initiatives supporting emerging artists and curators, offers emerging artists without UK commercial gallery representation the opportunity to produce a solo exhibition and event, exploring art and education, working with London's premier universities. In short, they look to target young and emerging, fresh new graduates entering the art world anew. They specifically target young artists with little access to the apparatus of power, fewer professional contacts, smaller and newer social networks, and less experience actually working in the art world. They specifically speak about purchasing works for the collection, about developing relationships with these young marginalised artists. They offer a route into an opaque and heavily gatekept industry for artists that often have no clear point of entry. It's an operational strategy that exploits the vulnerability of a precarious workforce. While this isn't a strategy specific to the Zabludovich collection, many institutions who spent lockdown casualising contracts for front of house staff could be described as exploiting the vulnerability of a precarious workforce. It does become sticky when discussing the moral implications of a boycott. Maybe, like the fictional artist Haroon, you think this whole boycott business is a bit lacking in nuance, a bit too hardline, and we should hear the other side out. So let's do it. Let's discuss the boycott like it's a pro-con list. Pro. Artists must eat. I would like the money. I can't afford to turn down an opportunity that will get me paid. Con. It's beyond me, or anyone, to be honest, to tell someone what money they should say yes or no to. But how much are they actually paying you? We've heard the figures, and they range from around £1,000 to £2,000. Around £1,000 for a Data Editions work, and £1,000 to £2,000 for an invite show. If you're a new name baby artist, maybe don't expect anything too far out of that price range for a sale, either. Now, £2,000 might be a lot of money to you and me, but considering Podu Zabludovich's £1.5 billion net worth, according to Business Insider in 2020, it's a bit lopsided. If the Zabludovich collection is really sincerely committed to supporting and investing in young emerging artists, don't you think they're a bit capable of spending a bit more? Yeah. Money is personal and political, so it's up to you. And from a purely financial perspective, selling to a big collector like the Zabludovich collection could mean your prices go up. Refusal might mean losing out on something tangible, whether that's opportunities, immediate money, or money from future sales too. But perspective is important. The boycott isn't just a white pube one-man smear campaign. Plenty of other artists and institutions have signed it. You might be alienating yourself from your peers as well as other collectors and future opportunities. Just be clear about what you're getting and what they're actually giving. Pro. I need a route into the art world and they're offering me one. I'm not getting any other opportunities, and I feel like if I say no to this, I'd be blowing my big shot.
con. Again, if you really think this, then it's beyond me or anyone to tell you otherwise. I will say, if the Zabludovich collection is knocking on your door, it's because you're cool and making interesting, exciting work that they see promising. It's flattering, but ultimately, they're looking at the social and cultural capital that you have and wanting to use it in their PR front for something quite insidious. They're looking into buying your art. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts, and they're not tastemakers that can give you your make or break moment. It's because they have identified it as already worth investing in, and that investment is part of a consistent, cynical strategy to artwash apartheid money. Pro. They're not actually that bad. They want a two-state solution, and they organise meetings with leaders from both sides behind closed doors. This is a nuanced issue, and you can't be so hardline about it all. Con. Fair fucks. I can't tell you how to calibrate your moral compass, but let's be clear about what's being asked. Though the Zabludovich collection has a public stance and puts out public statements about two-state solutions, this call for a boycott comes from Palestinian artists and cultural workers themselves. This isn't the woke brigade crashing in to ruin everyone's good time. It's a call for solidarity from a group of people who are being brutally oppressed. The Zabludovich collection's public statements about two-state solutions don't mean much when you look at the financial trail. They have been tied up with numerous points of contention, historically and currently. Please also consider that Podu has a huge amount of influence shaping public perception of Israeli apartheid through BICOM. He's the founder, major funder, and a former chairman of BICOM. I'm not really sure what to make of the claim that Podu organises meetings out of goodwill for peace when BICOM have rolled out a well-tested pro-Israeli crisis management strategy during acute periods of conflict and initiated a Stop the Boycott campaign to try and frame international Palestinian solidarity as institutional anti-Semitism. If you're going to take their money, don't delude yourself about what you're taking. Pro. No offence, but I am one person. I'm not going to single-handedly change anything. So what difference does it make if I say no? Con. Oh, mate. This just fundamentally isn't true. We have collective power if we move together, and each one of us matters in that refusal. Neoliberalism, individualism, and fear of scarcity would have you believe that we can't unionise, we can't work together, we all have to protect number one. It makes these institutions look bigger than they are. I'll tell you one thing for free. What all institutions fear most is artists going public about the reasons for their withdrawal or refusal. If we all collectively agree to withdraw, then we do have power. And that power is entirely possible and tangible when we speak about the specific boycott. There's a reason why the Zabludovich collection used Harun Mirza as a buffer to approach me. And there's a reason why Anita has, allegedly, been seen sliding into DMs with her phone number at the ready when prominent artists openly criticise the Zabludovich collection. They're aware of how precarious this entire system of power is, and it is built on the assumption of our silent complicity in it. There are way more examples of this same fight being won than we could ever know about, because so many artists don't say no in public. Those private refusals aren't a problem until people start to feel that their refusals don't matter. They do. They all do. The art world could never ever exist without artists. Each and every refusal is important. Pro. But all money in the art world is dirty money. If it's not the Zabs, it's an oil company, or it's the Tate and their financial connection to profit made as a result of slavery. The British government has the most blood on their hands, and we take their money via the Arts Council. We'll always be complicit in something. Why is this different? Yeah. Oh, con. Yeah, you're basically right. It is all dirty money. All of it has bloodstains from somewhere, and that's so shit, so painful. It shouldn't be on artists to navigate a financial landscape so hostile, sticky, and complicated. See Morgan Quaintance and Imran Peretta's conversation on involuntary complicity in May's Art Monthly. I can't tell you why this is absolutely different in didactic terms, because I fundamentally kind of believe that all of those problems are important that you mentioned, right? But I can say that the Zabludovich collection isn't just a philanthropic exercise with a morally iffy source. This isn't just about rich people doing rich people things with their rich people money. I believe they are explicitly and cynically art-washing money as a PR exercise. Profits rinsed off a brutal apartheid system are laundered through a labour pool of young, precarious artists. That is the Zabludovich collection's literal purpose, and it is one small part of a complex machinery that siphons in money to fund it all. Just look at the art they exhibit and collect. They favour artistic practices that bear the aesthetics of criticality, that have a political sensibility without ever being explicit enough to be specific and threatening. They're not buying nice, safe, abstract paintings from artists with name brand recognition at Frieze. They're actively associating themselves with edgy artists that have the cultural capital to provide them with a buffer for their darker corporate dealings. Assuming that this question is asked in good faith, I think this letter from a friend, and I've linked the letter from a friend, on Jessie Darling's Tumblr makes a compelling human case for the specific differentiation here. I encourage you to read it with an open mind and heart. Here is an extract. There is no clean, bloodless money in art. That ultimately, of all the private interests that constitute the situation of contemporary patronage, are built on the spoils of colonialism, war, and oppression. What is unusual about the contemporary situation in Palestine is that the demands for boycott, divestment, and sanctions come from the people of Palestine collectively, and they come from a situation of permanent war. It might not be the traditional endless bombardment, but instead is a war of attrition conducted through everything from the controlling of calories of food let into Gaza so people have just enough to survive but are always hungry, the limitation of medical and educational supplies, the demolition of houses in the West Bank and a state of total securitization and siege by an aggressive national force against an impoverished people living in the most densely populated area on the planet. This is different, direct and specific. The call for a boycott comes from the Palestinian people themselves, and we know it's an effective strategy. Purdue's think tank, BICOM, has pumped significant amounts of money, time and effort into a Stop the Boycott campaign. Purdue himself has underwritten a £300,000 fighting fund to oppose boycott motions from organisations like UCU, the University and College Union. See page 54 of a report I've linked. The Zabludovich collection functions as the cultural arm of a wider machinery that seeks to legitimise the Israeli state's brutal system of apartheid and colonial violence. A boycott fights back on a level playing field. It isn't performative or virtue signalling. It works, and it threatens them. Sometimes refusal is the only thing we have the capacity to fight with. We should do it. Pro. I work for a cultural organisation, and if we implement a boycott policy, it will look like institutional anti-Semitism. We may lose our charitable status as a result. Con. Firstly, criticisms of the Israeli state or of the policies of the Israeli government are not necessarily anti-Semitic. It's incredibly important to not conflate the entirety of the Jewish community with the state of Israel. That flattens a wide, diverse community into a monolith and erases Jewish voices that continually speak out against Israeli state violence. Israeli occupation of Palestine is a colonial problem. So opposition to the occupation is an opposition to settler colonialism and the violent methods used to uphold it. The occupation of Palestine itself is widely recognised as illegal under international law. UN Security Council Resolution 446 declared Israeli settlements have no legal validity. UN Security Council Resolution 478 declared the annexation of East Jerusalem a violation of international law, which is null and void and must be rescinded. UN Security Council Resolution 497 declared Israel's annexation of the Syrian Golan Heights is also illegal. This is a clear-cut issue. And an industry boycott of the Zabludovich collection for their proximity and part in profiting from the violence of an apartheid system is clear-cut too. I think this problem is a more realistic concern in the US, where several states have anti-BDS laws. Mostly, this takes the form of legislation prohibiting organisations with BDS policy from receiving public funding. For the UK, charitable organisations are entitled to refuse funding and lay out the terms of ethical governance in their mission statements. If accepting a donation would be detrimental to achieving their aims, for example, by contradicting the cultural integrity of their mission statement, or potentially threaten other sources of revenue through loss of public support or withdrawal of donations from other benefactors, the institution is entitled to refuse funding. So it's a really good idea, legally speaking, to get this in writing as soon as possible. If you have BDS formalised as ethics policy, then your institutional position is clear and potential refusal can go through official channels. For more information, please see the Chartered Institute for Fundraising's document on charities refusing funding. I have linked it in the text. Pro. I have been offered money from the Zabludovich collection through another larger institution, say, like the Tate, just a random and totally not real life example, in the form of an acquisition for said larger institution. I've been told that the money will be anonymously donated to that larger institution, so details of the money's origins wouldn't have to be made public. Con. So, this is a thing. Allegedly, of course. The Zabludovich collection seem to mostly make purchases from their own invite series, but they do make acquisitions via commercial galleries. And if you look carefully at an exhibition's wall text, you might see their name in a long list of supporters. You can find an alphabetized list of the institutions they have given philanthropic funding to here. Interestingly, the Tate Modern's 2012 A Arakawa show lists a display in the Anita Zabludovich Gallery. This gallery is not listed on current Tate Modern floor plans. Though you could certainly take their money for this acquisition without anyone knowing, the point about Zabludovich's bloody arms-dealing apartheid money being laundered through the art world's labour market still stands. In fact, it's potentially amplified, since the Zabludovich collection has a network of complicit arts organisations that are willing to play a part in mitigating individual unease about selling to them. This is inevitably the effect of Tory funding cuts and the impact of austerity on the cultural sector, the art world's increasing positivity towards private funding is something that Morgan Quaintance writes about far better than I ever could. But it's this cultural landscape that enables the Zabludovich collection to operate in this way, extend their influence and consolidate power. You could pitch a fair resistance to it all by simply asking that the money for the acquisition of your work come from elsewhere. Like you said, no one has to know. But you'll know. Be honest about what's being asked of you, even if you're only being honest with yourself. I think we've done our due BBC impartiality diligence there and covered both sides of the problems with the Zabludovich collection. But just talking about the problems in isolation, like their pure theory, is a sticky one. What does a boycott look like in practice? And what can you do if you've worked with the Zabludovich collection in the past but have changed your mind? One. I am an artist or cultural worker and I hate this. Well, if you haven't already, you can sign the BDZ boycott. The BDZ boycott is a collective refusal to work for and with the Zabludovich Art Trust. Signing means you will be pledging to refuse your work, labour and the sale of your artwork to the Zabludovich Art Trust or visit any of its institutions. It's an important public act in solidarity with those in occupied Palestine and their struggle for liberation. There is a sign-up form here. I have linked it in the text and I will link it in the description of the podcast audio that you're listening to now. If you're an artist with formal gallery representation, you can take preemptive action and make a formal agreement with your gallerists to ensure artworks are neither loaned nor sold to the Zabludovich Trust in future. Two, I have sold an artwork to or worked with the Zabludovich collection and I now regret it. You can de-author the artwork. De-authoring is the withdrawal of yourself as the author of a work. You publicly announce the withdrawal of conceptual content and sever your relationship with the owners of the work. You can de-author a formal artwork, but you can also de-author live or written work as it's primarily the withdrawal of labour. Legally speaking, it's a symbolic or performative act, but it will have real material and political impact to dissociate yourself from the work and the Zabludovich collection. From a financial position, it would tank the value of the artwork the Zabludovich collection has purchased. It'd be unlikely they'd be able to sell their artwork on, as your withdrawal of authorship would withdraw a source of value attached to that artwork. Socially and politically, a big public statement would be incredibly inconvenient for them. If their collection operates as a PR front, then a big PR mess where artists they've bought into are disassociating themselves from them would have a big impact. It would take away the thing they actually want, the prestige and clout of being associated with artists who actually have cultural capital. How to de-author? De-authoring is a public act. It just involves publishing a permanent public statement of de-authoring online or wherever is most visible. This statement should remain visible and publicly accessible to uphold and maintain the legitimacy of the act. BDZ have been working on a practical framework for how de-authoring could occur. BDZ have put together a template letter and a practical framework. You can contact them. Their email is bdzgrp@riseup.net for more info and support in the process of de-authoring, and you will be added to the list of boycott signatories. If you still have a residual ick, if you're in a financial position to do so, BDZ suggests making reparative payment of past income from engaging with the Zabludovich Trust to charities that work to support Palestinian people. they recommend MAP, medical aid for Palestinians, but others exist too. 3. I am a cultural worker slash artist, and the cultural institution I work for slash am working with has taken money from the Zabludovich collection. It feels like it's bigger than me, but what can I do to support institutional change? You can pressure the institutions you're working for or with to adopt BDS policy. This might sound really far out and massive, and institutions won't take action without pressure and guidance, but it has got precedent. Artists have pulled a fast one. Morag Keel included a note about BDZ at the end of her exhibition handout at the ICA. It read, "I have signed a boycott to not show at the Zabludovich collection and data editions or take direct money from Zabludovich, and I urge the ICA and others to do the same." And then there was a link to BDZ sign up page. When we spoke to the ICA about their ethics policy in 2019, even though they had taken money from the Zabludovich collection in the past, they said it was a moment of pressure that made them adopt BDS as policy. The Goldsmiths curating MFA divested from the ZAB's testing grounds program. This was a change that came directly from the students. So if you're studying at CSM, Chelsea, Birkbeck or Sussex, pressuring your art school has worked and it is proven as possible. As a cultural worker inside an institution, you might be more intimately inducted into the institutional justifications for taking the Zabludovich collection's money. Please see the Chartered Institute for Fundraising document on charities refusing funding and the information about refusing funding earlier. In terms of materialising this, maybe see if any of your colleagues or co-workers can help you mobilise and push for this as formal policy change. It might also be worth contacting your union about helping you with this and about adopting BDS policy themselves if they haven't already. BDZ are also kindly offering their help to institutions who want to draft or redraft their mission statements, anti-racist statements, and ethical funding policies to clarify their refusal of funding from the Zabludovich Art Trust. You can contact them at bdzgrp@riseup.net. The email will be linked in the text and also in the description for the podcast audio you're listening to now. 4. I am an artist based in the US. Does any of this apply to me? Howdy. Yes, it does. The Zabludovich Art Trust has crossed the pond and is in the process of consolidating a base for itself over in the US. They have a gallery space in New York's 1500 Broadway building, and Tiffany Zabludovich runs Times Square space. Data Editions is also included in the boycott on account of Anita Zabludovich providing the seed funding and their continued association with her. Data Editions seem to be working with artists internationally on digital commissions, so it crosses borders. The boycott then faces a specific problem with a lack of visibility in the US, so it's strategically important to link BDZ up with decolonial and anti-racist organising that's already taking place in the American arts landscape. There is a crossover of concerns, so it's not a reach. Letter from a Friend, published on Jessie Darling's Tumblr, notes, "Gaza remains effectively a laboratory for testing out tactics in suppression of protest and revolution, and for the repression of any expression of suffering. These tactics are then exported around the world, from Afghanistan to Ferguson. And solidarity across those concerns has, of course, happened before. In 2019, Hannah Black, Kieran Finlayson and Toby Haslett wrote the Tear Gas Biennial. A week later, Warren Canders resigned from the board of the Whitney Biennial. The text pointed out the links between tear gas manufactured by Warren Kanda's company Safariland and its violent use in Gaza, Ferguson, Standing Rock and on the US-Mexico border. Tear Gas Biennial called for a boycott, and after months of protest and action, it articulated the way collective feeling was shifting, acting as a rallying point and renewal of energy for action and withdrawal. I mention Tear Gas Biennial because I know we have an inexplicable but significant readership in the US. I'm writing to you now. This is connected. We just need your help to join the dots to see it. From London to New York to Gaza, there are straight lines. We are more powerful together, and all of these struggles are interlinked. The boycott of the Zabludovich Art Trust was issued in July 2014. At the time, Israel was launching an attack on Gaza. Military operation referred to as Operation Protective Edge. By the time a ceasefire was agreed, 7 weeks later, between 2,125 and 2,310 Palestinians were killed in Gaza, and between 10,626 and 10,895 were wounded, including 3,374 children. Israel killed more Palestinians in 2014 than in any other year since 1967. As I try to finish writing this now, Gaza is still under siege, blockaded by air, by land, and by sea. It has been an open-air prison since 2007. Israel's military rule in Gaza and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, disrupts every aspect of daily life. Palestinians are dying because of Israeli state violence, whether it's airstrikes or the relentless war of attrition and or the brutality of living under an apartheid regime. Palestinians have called for a boycott of Israeli cultural institutions that promote acceptance in the global cultural sphere of Israel's ongoing colonization, occupation, and its apartheid policies. Podu Zabludovich's arms money, BICOM, the Tamares Group's property in occupied Palestinian territory. The Zabludovich Collection is a cultural institution that exists for the fundamental purpose of laundering blood-stained money through a precarious cultural workforce. It is the PR wing that seeks to legitimise and artwash profits squeezed out of a system of apartheid. The boycott asks artists, cultural workers, and producers to not sell or show their work with the Zabludovich Collection, to withdraw the conceptual content of their work from the collection, to refuse to sell their labour to the Zabludovich Collection, the Zabludovich Art Trust, and its associated institutions, including Data Editions. The boycott asks the viewing public to refuse to enter the London Project space on 176 Prince of Wales Road, the New York space at 1500 Broadway, and the residency sites available to visit on the island of Saaristo, Finland. The call for a boycott will be upheld until the directors of the Zabludovich Collection publicly recognise the rights of Palestinians and desist from all activities and investments supporting the Israeli state in maintaining an oppressive and colonial system of apartheid. The boycott works. They don't care about refusals made behind closed doors because names can be quietly removed from websites and no one has to know. It is artists, the same exact precarious workforce that the Zabludovich Collection relies on for silent complicity, that grease the wheels of the art world's machinery. If we all make our disavowal public together, news will spread.